Morning. Today's daf Mamatzias Yud Ches. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf office on the Zichron Nishmas Liba Gabriela Bashmol. We start today on Yazayin Amud Beis. We're at the top of the, towards the top of the Amud, and we are going following the statement of Rabbi Yochanan. If you look at the very bottom, Yazayin Amud Aleph, the very last line, so the Gemara quotes in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Hatoin Acher Maisa Beis Din, that if you make a claim against Maisa Beis Din, so Olam Erklum, that is simply a unhonored claim. You look at the last Rashi in Yazayin Amud Aleph, so Rashi says, what are examples of Maisa Beis Din where you just simply cannot make a claim against it? So Rashi over there writes, Davar Ushu Tanai Beis Din, something which is a stipulation made by Beis Din, meaning this is an institution, a rabbinic institution, Kagon, Ksuva, Mazon Aisha, Rabanos. So for example, the Ksuva that a man writes to his wife, and the support that a husband has to give for his wife, and the support that a husband has to provide for his daughters. So Aton V'Amar Paraji Shalom Be'edim. So if your claim is, yeah, I paid it, just nobody knows about it, and I didn't do it in front of witnesses, Lo Amar Klum, you did not say anything. Now, if you take a look at the top of Zayin Amud Beis, so the reason is, my time up, like the Gemara in the very top, called Maisa Beis Din Kaman D'Nakishar B'Yadei Dami. Because once it's a rabbinic institution, it's as if the one who's obligated is holding the piece of paper in his hand. So even though there's no actual physical paper in their hand, but the Chachamim's institution is so strong, it's so powerful, so it's just basically, it's as if they are holding the document in their hand, and so therefore they are a holder, they're a document holder, not physically, but legally. And so therefore, you can't just simply say, yeah, I pay them, even though there are no witnesses. The only way that you can make a counterclaim against a note, right, a note that is signed by two witnesses, is only when you have proof, you have evidence. And your claim against that is simply not going to be believed. Okay, so this is the statement made by Rav Yochanan, to which Rabbi Chiya bar Abba says back to Rav Yochanan, that's a Mishnah. What did you tell us? You told us nothing other than just simply a Mishnah. And which Mishnah is it? So the Gemara quotes a Mishnah, it's from Ksuvos, Hotzi Geve Inimo Ksuva Gove Ksuvasa, that if a woman says to her husband, or now her ex-husband, right, you divorced me, and you never paid me my ksuva. So, just by procuring her get document, so she's able to collect her ksuva, as I mentioned yesterday. The get and the ksuva are two different documents. The get is a bill of divorce. All it does is separate, it terminates the marriage, but in no way proves payment to the ksuva. The ksuva is a totally different document. The ksuva was a prenuptial agreement that was made between husband and wife. And she's now showing her get, and she's saying, you didn't pay me, and he's going to pay. So he has to pay. So it's pretty clear from that Mishnah that despite the fact that she doesn't have a ksuva document and all she has is a get document, she's going to get paid. As long as she's provide evidence that she's divorced, she's going to get paid. Why should that be? She doesn't have a ksuva document. And the answer has to be that even though she doesn't have a ksuva document, but the halacha is that you're going to... That's the Tanai Beis Din. This is a stipulation that she's entitled to a ksuva. Therefore, she is going to get paid, despite the fact that she doesn't have a ksuva. Okay, Adkan. This is where we got to yesterday in the Gemara. And Rav Yochanan's response to that Mishnah was, let's just pick it up right where we left off yesterday. It's on Yuzan and Beis. It's four lines down, five lines down. Amar Leh, this is Rav Yochanan's response. He loved the Daila Chas, Balom Mishkacha Marganisa, Tusa. So Rav Yochanan's response was, look, I picked up the shard and you found the pearl underneath. Meaning, the expression is that, yeah, you knew the Mishnah. Yeah, I knew the Mishnah. But you didn't understand that to be a general principle. You might have thought that it was specific to that particular Mishnah. What I'm telling you now is a general principle. Anytime you have a Tanai Beis Din, anytime you have a stipulation made by Beis Din, so that is, it is binding, and it's as if it's a contractual obligation with the one who's obligated holding on to the contract. So what I'm telling you now is, it's not just a Mishnah, it's a general rule. The Mishnah now is an excellent proof to the general rule. Amar Abaye, we continue in the Gemara. The Abaye says, my Marganisa, I don't know if it's such a pearl. Dilma, but Malkum Shein Kosin Ksuva Askinan. I could say that maybe the Mishnah is talking about a very specific case. Specifically, it's talking about in a location where they don't write Ksuva. Meaning, the Ksuva obligation is in force. Some communities wrote a Ksuva, some communities did not. So maybe the Mishnah was only describing the halacha in a community where they don't write the ksuva. So now, if we lived in such community, now I totally understand. Why doesn't she have a ksuva? because the minhag of our community is not to write a ksuva, but haynu ksuva sa. And so therefore, in lieu of not having a ksuva, she has a get. But if, let's say, the minhag in the community is to write a ksuva, so maybe the woman's right and ability to collect her ksuva is only going to be predicated on her physically holding on to the ksuva. This is what Abai is suggesting, and so what Abai is basically saying is, I don't know if this Mishnah is really speaking to a universal truth. It could be a limited application. So how do I know Abai? But then Abai says, La mil sihi damre. Abai says, but you know what? I take it back. Meaning, upon further consideration, I'm wrong. Do you really think that the Mishnah is only talking about a scenario in which a ksuva is not written? And then you want to tell me that in a location where you write up ksuva, her ability to collect ksuva is only going to be predicated on her holding on to a physical ksuva? So let's consider the following. Let's say the woman's a widow, but she's a widow from Erison. So unfortunately, she only went through the first stage of marriage with her husband, and then her husband dies. And she didn't get to the nisu, and she didn't get to the second stage of marriage. Now, typically speaking, when is the ksuva written up? The ksuva is written up at the time of nisuin, not at the time of the Erison. When is the ksuva in force? So it's enforced at marriage. So the Gemara says, "Amanam in Erison be my gavya." So now you have a scenario where she's a widow. She's widowed from Erison. So now she has no get, obviously, because he didn't divorce her, right? He widowed her, so he died. So obviously she has no get. She has no ksuva because they typically only wrote the ksuva at the time of nisuin. So now she literally has no documentation. So now when she goes to Basin, she says to Basin, okay, I'm entitled to a ksuva, which she is. So what means of evidence is she going to provide in order so that she can get paid her ksuva?
So the financial obligation
starts at the time of Harrison. We'll see. There's going to be a difference, but the base amount of the obligation starts at Erison. Now, So the Eidas Mises Baal. So the Gemara says, okay. So maybe what she'll do is she'll bring a pair of witnesses to testify and say that her husband died. So the Gemara says, Litam Malema Parate. So the Gemara says, then the counterclaim to that is going to be, well, we already paid you. So in other words, even though she'll bring witnesses to say that the husband died, the counterclaim made by the Yorshin is, okay, but if that's all you have, we'll just simply say we paid you. And the Gemara says that maybe that's how it'll play out in court, where she'll bring a pair of witnesses to say that the husband died. The counterclaim to that will be, we paid you. Now remember, she has no documentation because there's no get because she wasn't divorced. There was no ksuva because he died before Nisuin. So now what? So now all she has is witnesses, and then the counterclaim will be, but we paid you. So the Gemara says, so the Gemara says, now if we arrive at this conclusion, so the Gemara says, so it's a dead end, and that's not why the Chachamim instituted ksuva. The Chachamim did not institute ksuva, so it would become an uncollectible obligation. That's basically what the Gemara is saying. It's ridiculous. It can't be. The Chachamim would never put the woman in a situation where, oh, I'm sorry, you're widowed. Oh, I'm sorry, there's just no way for you to collect the ksuva. It's an impossibility. So the Gemara at that point says, I'm sorry. So this is now where Abaye says, so you see, it must be that even though there is no documentation, Rav Yochanan's right. Anytime you have an institution of Beis Din, a Maisa Beis Din, that creates a collectible obligation, even though she's not holding any physical documentation in her hand. Yeah.
With a widow, she can't produce a marriage contract. She gets no social security.
Just letting you know. Right. Wow. Amarlei Mar Kashisha Bered Rav Chisel Rav Ashi VaAmanim in Eris and Dislik Suva Menalan. Now the Gemara says, and Danny, this was your point that you made a little bit earlier. So the Gemara says, and how do we know that all together? Meaning, she's an Amana from Erison, from the first stage of marriage, and this entire discussion was predicated on the idea that she's entitled to a ksuva. And the Gemara says, and where does that come from? Meaning, can you show me a source that this is in fact so? So the Gemara says, okay, and perhaps now you'll show me the Mishnah in Ksuvos. And the Mishnah reads, Nisa Amalam. sorry, Nis Armala, oh, Nis Garsha, Bein Menehers, and Bein Menesuin, Govasakol, that if she becomes either widow or divorced, either from Erisin or from Nesuin, she collects everything. And when we say Govah Sakol collects everything, what's included in everything? So take a look at Rashi over here. Bein Ksuva Shel Tanai Beis Din, Dehainu Man L'Amanu, Masem L'Besula, Bein Tosefes. So we know that when a man marries a woman, so he commits himself to a Ksuva obligation. There's a base amount, and then Tosefes. And then if he would like to, he'd like to add more to the Ksuva, so he has the volition of doing so. So the base amount is 200 zuz if he marries a Besula, and 100 zuz if he marries an Almana. The Tosefes is exactly whatever he wants to add onto it. So when the Mishnah says, Govim and Akol, he collects everything, so that means either the base amount, or if there's an additional amount that was added into the Ksuva, that amount as well. So where what does it look like right now from the from this Mishnah? It sounds like from the Mishnah that whether she's divorced or widowed, either from Erisin or from Nisuin, she collects her ksuva. Certainly sounds like from the Mishnah she's collecting the ksuva from Erisin. The Gemara says, Dilma Echad Kasav La. So the Gemara says, okay, that Mishnah is not a proof. All the Mishnah is saying is if, you write the important word, if he writes her a ksuva, so then he has to pay her. But that doesn't necessarily mean that there's a default assumption that every time a man marries a woman at Erusin, he's writing her a ksuva. So the Gemara says, well, if he wrote her a ksuva at Erusin, the Mishnah now is telling us that it's a collectible obligation. That doesn't sound like much of a chiddush. So the Gemara says, no, it is a chiddush. Because there are opinions, there's an opinion, which the Gemara is going to introduce us to right now, that even when a man writes a ksuva for his wife, even if he writes it at the point of erusin, that wasn't intended to be obligated right now. The intent of the husband is only so that it comes into effect only at Nisuin. There's an, according to Rav Elazar ben Azarya, an implicit condition in the Ksuva, which is that it's not going to be valid until Nisuin. Shalo da'amar, sorry. Lafugim and Rav Elazar ben Azarya, da'amar, shalo kasav la, ela amenas lekonsa. The amenas, it's an implicit condition in the Ksuva that it doesn't take effect until they get married. So it's Terichlei. So then the Gemara says, so now it's a Chiddush, because the Mishnah is telling us that if a husband were to write a get, sorry, if a husband were to write a ksuva for his wife at the point of erusin, so if she becomes a widow or if he divorces her, he has to pay her. Why is that a Chiddush? Because Rav Elazar ben Azarya opines otherwise. He's of the opinion that even if he writes it, he's still not going to be obligated because it wasn't intended to be obligated until Nisuin. Deganami Diktani, the Gemara says now, after thinking about this, go back to the Mishnah and read the Mishnah again, because actually this reads really well in the Mishnah. Go Vesakol. The Mishnah says that she collects everything. Now the Gemara says, obviously, if you're collecting everything, meaning the base amount and the Tosefes, how do we know? It's such a good point. How do we know how much of the Tosefes is? In other words, the only way we're going to know that Tosefes amount is because there is a physical ksuva, and he wrote the Tosefes in the ksuva. But if we're talking about a situation in which no ksuva was written, so my govah's a call. The Gemara says, so we don't know how much Tosefes is, and even if he had something in mind, that doesn't matter. We're not mind readers. So, sure, she'll get her base amount, but that's not what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah says, Govah Sakol. So the Gemara says, so upon further consideration and review, that Mishnah is only talking about a scenario where he actually writes a ksuva document for her. Okay, so, back to just a simple question. An almana is going to get her ksuva even if she becomes a widow from Erisin. And how do I know that? Even though he didn't actually write the ksuva. So, so we are now on the top of Yechez Amad Aleph. Second line down. Ishto Arusa. So it comes from the following. It's a braisa. If a woman has gone through Erisin, and only through Erisin, meaning the first stage of marriage, and that's it. Lo onen v'lo mitame la. So, if the husband When she dies, so he does not become an onen for her. And in other words, he doesn't have the status of being an onen, and he does not become tamei towards her. Rashi explains. Second line of Rashi. Lo onen en aninus chala lovely sir chilas kachim. We know that when you are a kohen and you lost one of your seven relatives, so A, you have a heter to go to the cemetery and participate in the funeral of the relative, even though normally kohen cannot be matame for anybody. The exception, notable exception, is his relatives and mace mitzvah. So here, a wife is considered a relative, but only second stage, meaning only after the point of nisuin are they considered married enough to allow him to go to the and participate in the cemetery. But by the first stage, no. And now I'm going out of order, by the way, because the Gemara makes these 2 points in not in the order that I'm presenting it. And which is really not the Gemara's first point, is that we also know that when a kohen is an onen, meaning on the day of death, he now has a halachic status of what we would call an onen, and therefore he can't go to the Beis HaMikdash and participate in eating karbanos over that day. So Rashi says that if they only went through the first stage of marriage, not through the second stage of marriage, for vis-a-vis the halacha of onen, he is not an onen, meaning he could go to the Beis HaMikdash that day and participate in eating of the karbanos. Lomatamela, next Rashi, imkonu dichsiv kim l'sheiro, v'hainu ishto. Now the Torah does make an allowance for a husband to be at his wife's funeral. V'hailav sheiro hu delo ba'u adayin lidei kiruv basar. But sheiro means that they are bonded, physically bonded, husband and wife, at the first stage of marriage, even though they are married, halachically, min haTorah, married, but they are not considered a union, a physical union. That only takes place at the point of nisuin, not at the point of erusin. So therefore, he is not given this dispensation of attending the funeral. V'chein. Now let's go in the other direction. He lo ones v'lo matame lo. Here it gets a little bit trickier. Let's say they only go through the first stage of marriage of Erisin. So now she does not become a nonenis, and she doesn't become a tami towards him. What? Now that's difficult to understand. Now keep in mind, even if she were a bas kohen, I mean, she wasn't clearly married to a kohen. But even if she were a bas kohen, she's allowed to come into contact with tumah. So what is the brayso over here making reference to? So let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi v'lo matame lo, la mishim kahuna, ka'amar, de'ein kohen is muzeres ala tumah dechsiv b'nei Aaron. So Rashi reminds us that we know that the daughters of Aaron are not prohibited from becoming tamei. So over here, so what does it mean that she does not become a tamei towards him? She for sure could. So there's no general prohibition. Ella ena zekuka l'tamei lo. Lo kohenes v'lo Yisrael she mitzvah le'sasik b'sheva meisim mitzvah hamur b'parashat echsev lo itama v'tanya lo itama mitzvah v'im lo ratza mitamei moso al karcho u'maisa b'yosef v'kohen v'chula b'toros kohanim. So what the Gemara means over here, says Rashi, is that when a kohen has an allowance / dispensation to become a tami for his wife, it's more than an allowance. It actually becomes an obligation. Meaning what the Torah is saying is, you're allowed, but let's go one step further, you're obligated to participate in the funeral of your wife. And again, from the standpoint of the kohen to his wife, it entails 2 points. Number one, he normally is not allowed to become tami. Now he is allowed to become tamei, and then step number two, you really should participate. Meaning, it's not that you're allowed to, you should. It's a mitzvah now to participate. So from the standpoint of the woman to her husband, we're saying the same thing, but with no iser tumah, we move on to point number two, which is, you are supposed to participate in the funeral of your husband. With that stated, still, the point here being is that if they only go through the first stage of marriage, for vis-a-vis the cemetery, the funeral, there is no mitzvah that kicks in yet. Okay. Mesa, continuing in the Brisa, in Yersha. If she dies, so he does not inherit her. We know the halach is that a husband inherits his wife's estate, but that's only good when they go through the second stage of marriage, not the first stage of marriage. Rashi quotes the Gemara Baba Basra. Okay, Mace who go vik suva sa. Now, if he dies, she collects suva. This is the part of the Braisa we want to hear right now. Because it's at this point in the Braisa where we're looking for a source that teaches us that when a woman becomes a widow after Erusin but before Nisuin, she's going to get her ksuva. We have now found the Braisa. So again, the Gemara deflects with the same deflection we made just a moment ago. Dilma de Kasav La. So the Gemara says, okay, but maybe the Braisa is talking about a case where he actually wrote up the ksuva. V'chitema de Kasav La Maila Meimra. So, and maybe you'll tell me, well, if he wrote a ksuva for her, so then we have zero chiddush. There's no point being made. So Mesa Einu Yosha, it's Rikhle, the Gemara says, well, that's not true. There certainly is a chiddush in that when she dies, he doesn't inherit her. That's a chiddush. So finally, what a simple question we're asking. How do I know that an almana is entitled to her ksuva? When she becomes a widow from Erusin. Where is the source of that? So the Gemara says, after looking at a Mishnah in Ksuvos, and after looking at the Braisa, which we also saw back in Ksuvos, so the Gemara says, finally, you know what? Let's come around full circle, and we're going to go back to our Mishnah. So Abai Meguvet the Masis and Kahal Derbe Diisa Kedach Mamakam Shein Kosin Ksuva Askin and Deget Hainu Ksuva. So the Gemara says, well, let's go back to our original point, which was, remember the Mishnah says that when she procures a get, she's going to be paid her ksuva. And we theorized, well, maybe that's talking about a community where they don't write ksuva. So the Gemara says, "Atu get manu masaim ksive." The Gemara says, now let's consider. She provides a get. She's going to get paid her ksuva. You know, there's nowhere on the get that it says how much she's owed. And again, of course not, because the get is not a ksuva. The get is a bill of divorce. The ksuva is a prenuptial agreement. These are two totally separate documents. So of course the get's not going to be written on it how much she is entitled to. So when she's providing her get, the get clearly is not the means in which she's going to be receiving her ksuva. It must be that there is a separate ksuva obligation. So the Gemara says, well, maybe we'll say the following. Maybe we'll go back to the point where it's a community where we don't normally write a ksuva, and the get will be a substitute for the ksuva. The Gemara says, okay, but litam velema parati. So the Gemara says, okay, but then the husband will just simply say, but I paid it already. Meaning, if the get becomes a substitute for the ksuva, and the ksuva is kind of implicit in the get, so but then the husband could just simply say, okay, you know, I divorced you, of course you have a get. And now what are you arguing? That the get is also allowing you to collect ksuva? Okay, I like that argument. But I already paid it. So what, I don't understand. So where do we stand right now? So the Gemara says, now, maybe there should be some sort of proof that he paid the ksuva. So the Gemara makes the following suggestion. Well, maybe what we'll do is that he'll pay her a ksuva. Again, we're speaking about a location where no ksuva is written. So in other words, he'll pay her the ksuva obligation. Then he'll go to the get, which the get serves as a means of evidence that she's owed a ksuva. And we'll tear the get. Now, we won't shred it. We'll just put a tear on the get. So the Gemara says, Amar lan lo shavaktan. Amra bi'ina lan suva bay. But the Gemara says, but one can easily understand that the woman says, what are you doing? I mean, you got to be kidding me. You're not going to tear my get. In other words, when I want to get remarried, they'll say to me, we know you were married. And I'll say, yeah, but I was also divorced. And I'll bring the get as evidence. And if I come and I show a torn get, they're going to look at me suspect. So the Gemara says, well, I'm sorry, Gita Danan. So the Gemara says, well, why don't we make the following suggestion? And that is as follows. Why don't we have him pay the ksuva? Now again, we're talking about a location where no ksuva is written. Then just simply go to her and say, look, here's what we'll do. We'll tear the get, but we'll also write a note on the back saying, get was torn in lieu of the fact that the ksuva payment was made. So the Gemara says, so now there'll be an explanation why the get was torn. So the Gemara says, no, because the reason why it was torn may be by virtue of the fact that the get is just simply a pasul get. In other words, then no one will read the note on the back. So the Gemara says, and also consider the fact that if we if she prevents us from tearing the get, she may use the get. She may use the get once again to collect the ksuva again. So the Gemara says, "Altukol the magbe bebeidina magbe." The Gemara says, "Now wait 1 second. That doesn't necessarily mean that anyone who collects an obligation is collecting it in Beis Din." So the Gemara says. So the Gemara basically says. So it's very hard to come to any type of resolution in terms of how we can use the get as proof that the ksuva was paid. We're not going to tear the get. We're not going to write a note in the back. So basically, the Gemara has come around full circle to the idea that the get obviously is not serving as a means of evidence that the ksuva was paid. And once again, now we're back basically to the point of, it therefore must stand that, and if the husband's going to be paying a ksuva obligation, he is going to have to bring witnesses to say that he paid. Otherwise, she can just simply come and demand the payment of the get once again. Of her ksuva once again. Okay, Adkan. Okay. Well, again, let's go now or back then. In other words, back then, so the ksuva obligation that he has to pay her, so if it's a community where the ksuva is normally written, so he'll get the note. And then his obligation, of course, is to tear the note up. Okay, we are now in the middle of Yuches Amun Aleph. We're at the Mishnah, and we are continuing in the discussion. Just as a quick recap, so finishing up the statement of Rav Yochanan says that if you make a claim against Maisa Beis Din, any act of Beis Din, any institution of Beis Din, so it's as if the person who is obligated is a note holder, as if they're holding the note, and therefore you cannot make any counterclaim against that. And then what we spent the rest of the time in the Gemara doing is seeking a source and a proof for this statement of Rav Yochanan, and then it led us to the discussion of how do we know that a widow altogether is in fact entitled to a ksuva from the point of Erusin. We now start with the next Mishnah. Next Mishnah is going to be continuation discussion of what do I do with documents that were found. So we have spent a considerable amount of time in the Gemara discussing notes of indebtedness. An IOU is found in the street. Do I return it, yes or no? So that takes us all the way back to the Mishnah on Yud Beis, where the Mishnah there discussed at length. The Gemara discussed at length. The Mishnah was pretty succinct. The Gemara discussed at length whether or not we return a note of indebtedness. We made a number of distinctions, a number of considerations. That was a very long sugya, now that I'm looking over. We are now continuing in the Mishnah Bar Mitzvah, finding other documentation, and who do I return it to? Matzei Gittei Nashim, v'shichrui avadim. So let's say I find either a get, bill of divorce, or shichrui avadim, a note of emancipation for an eved kenani. The daidiki, or let's say we find a daidiki. A daidiki is a last will and testament, matana, or a note serving as proof of a gift, shovrim, or receipts. So in all these cases, we do not return them. Why not? Shani Omer, ksuvim hayuvanim lachalem shalom. Because all we know is that they were written. We don't know that they were exercised. So because unlike the note of indebtedness, where it's more than likely that the note of indebtedness was lost by the malva, because as we discussed at length, if the note of indebtedness was returned back to the Lova, he's going to tear it up immediately. Over here, these documentations were written and meant to be exercised, to be used, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it was, we don't have a compelling argument to make that it was falling out of either the giver or the receiver. And so therefore, since we have no compelling argument to make that it fell out of one over the other, so therefore the Mishnah says, lo yachzir, we don't return it. And I guess that means then that we just simply give it to Beis Din, let Beis Din hold on to it, and okay. Now, Adkan Divrei Mishnah, and the Gemara starts off the following discussion. Taima Denimlach, Shelo Linim, Ha Amar Tenu, Nosnim, Ve'afilu Zman Meruba. What comes out from the Mishnah is the following. It could very well be, let's focus right now on the bill of divorce. The Mishnah says that the bill of divorce was written by the husband. Right? The husband has an obligation to commission the sofer to write the get. Upon doing so, then the husband is going to hand over the get to his wife. But again, as the Mishnah articulated, but we don't know. What we don't know is we found the get somewhere in the street, and we don't know at what point in its history was it lost. Was it when the husband commissioned the writing of the get, and after the sofer wrote it and gave it to the husband, and the husband lost it, or husband then gave it to his wife, and then she lost it? We simply don't know. And that's why the Mishnah says we're not going to return it. Now, ha'amar tenu nosten. But what becomes pretty clear from the Mishnah is that the when the husband is presented the get that was found, and he says, oh yeah, right, it's fine. Meaning, I wrote up the get, I gave it to her, and she lost it. And he says, now, just give it to her. So then, what you're going to do is, you're going to give her the get. Because now, no longer a concern. And as Rashi points out over here, afilu nimtza l'zman meruba. Mishanaf av lochay shenen shema get acher hu. Shishmo seim shavim umidam acher nafa. So now at this point in time, what's the only thing left to worry about? Meaning, the names are identified on the document. And we go to the husband and say, you're familiar with this? And he says, sure I am. I gave it to my wife. Now you can give it to her. So at this point in time, there's nothing left to worry about. And Rashi foreshadows now, there is something left to worry about, and that is, strange as it may be, there are other people, there may be another couple with the same names. And so maybe what this is a document that was intended from one other husband to another wife who happens to have the same name.
Same date.
Why? Well, he's not... The date, meaning whatever. Whatever.
I mean, like, so many details that comes...
No, he's not claiming... He's not. In other words... Maybe he is claiming what the date was, but in other words, it's the same name. So, and we know, we discussed this in the beginning of Gittin extensively. It was one of the big themes of Gittin, is that in order for a get to be valid, it has to be written l'shma. It has to be written up with the intent of this man and this woman. So, even if I find a document with a get that has my name and my wife's name on it, you can't use it if it was not written l'shma. It's a psul d'oraisa. It nullifies the get. So this could be another concern. And what's clear from our Mishnah is we don't concern ourselves with that. Now, yes, the Mishnah wrote that you're not allowed to return it, but only because the husband doesn't give instruction to return it. Once the husband gives instruction to return it, we do. And even if it's much later on, and we're not concerned that maybe this may be a coincidence of having the same names. So now back to the Gemara, time of the Nimlach, Shalot Ninim, Hamartinu Nosim, Ve'afiluz Mamaruba, Ruminu. And the Gemara says, now on this Diuk that we just learned together in our Mishnah in Bamitzia, Gemara says, let's now compare it to a Mishnah in Gittin. The Mishnah in Gittin describes the following scenario. Let's say a person is delivering a get, and he loses it. And he finds it, he recovers it immediately. Kasher. And imla pasul. But if he does not recover it immediately, and some time goes by, so then it becomes disqualified. Okay, a little bit of parameters. What does it mean immediately? What does it mean some after some time? So Rashi reminds us about the Gemara in Gittin. I'm reading Rashi Matzalato Hasma Farshkadei Shetavor Shayar V'Tishra V'Toch Kach Lekel Amemer Mishayar Sha'av Rasham Nafal Sha'arei Lo Sha'ashir Shetachana. So we are en route to Israel. Remember all the Mishnayos over there in Gittin? And basically we are part of a caravan. And in this caravan, somebody's delivering a get. So, losing it and recovering it immediately means that there was no other convoy, there was no other caravan that passed in front of us. However, if after losing it, there was another caravan that passed through, and so now the traffic would give some indication that maybe this get was lost by some other traveler who also lost his get, so therefore this is considered now too late. So says the Mishnah in Gittin. So, here's the problem. The Mishnah in Gittin says that recovery would allow us to deliver the get, but only when recovered immediately. Our Mishnah, now not explicitly, but certainly implicitly, would seem to indicate that even if I recover the get sometime later, as long as the husband approves the giving of the get, we will give the get. So now, the discrepancy between the Mishnah Bab Metzia and the Mishnah in Gittin. I'm a rabbi. So on this, rabbi gives the following answer. Lo kasha kam b'makam shayaros mitzuyim, kan b'makam she'in shayaros mitzuyim. So the first distinction we're going to make is traffic. Was there a lot of traffic? Were there caravans passing through, or there were no caravans passing through? But then rabbi says, but let's not stop here. Let's go one step further. And the Gemara says, and Rabbi says as follows, and even when there are other caravans passing through, the only time that we're entertaining this idea of coincidence, of that there may be another get document with the same name, is only when I know that the person from the city who wrote the get had another person there with the same name. So in other words, according to Rabbi, for us to even entertain this idea that, wow, there may be two guys with the same name, so I need two factors. Tarte l'reyusa. There has to be two factors. One is that it has to have been lost, and there has to have been other traffic going through. So at least now the other traffic presents an opportunity for another person to have lost his get. And two, the person from who was sending the get, or the husband where the get was being sent from, happens to have another person in that city. We know this. Happens to have another person in that city with the same name. Only under those circumstances, Rabbi says, when you put those two factors together, then do I concern myself with this possibility. But if I don't have these two, so then we don't concern ourselves.
Don't we have a principle that if something is not common, you look at how many coincidences you have in this.
Right.
Two names, right. Same date, same
agreed.
City, same destination.
Like, right. Agreed. Right. I agree. In other words, and at least Rabbi now makes it so that you need both in order for a red flag to come up. Otherwise, we're not concerned. The Gemara says, now I know this is true because let's consider the following. There was a get that was lost in the court of Rav Huna. And in the get, it was written, it was in the city of Shaviri, and right by the river Rachis. Okay, every get has identified in it the city in which it's written, and a water source that it's near. Okay, it's an identifying marker that helps us identify location. Amar Rav Huna. Now, to that Rav Huna says, Chayshinan l'shnei Shaviri. So Rav Huna says, well, we're worried about the possibility that there were two towns by the name of Shviri. So Rav Chista gives Rabba time for preparation. Look, you're going to have to investigate this matter. Because this evening it's going to be asked from you. Rav Huna is going to ask you the question later. So go ahead and do some investigation. And he does. And he did some investigation, and any court document is going to be returned to its original owner. So now let's consider the court of Rav Huna. The court of Rav Huna is considered an area in which it's a high traffic area, meaning a lot of people are going through the court. And Rabbi says you have to return it. So so what comes out is the following, that it's a high traffic area, so that means it's like there were shayars passing through, and only under the circumstance in which there were two Yosef ben Shimons, then and only then would he be concerned that maybe the get was written by another man for his wife, who coincidentally also happened to have lost their lost the get. So basically what comes out now is that you see clearly from Rabba's conduct over here and his response over here, that in order for us to be alarmed at all, that this is not the man and this is not the woman identifying the get, there has to be two factors. One, traffic. Two, the person who sent the get had another person in that town with the same name. So the Gemara says, Avad Rabba Uvda Bekisna de Pumbedisa Kishmaite. Now, Rabba had an incident in Pumbedisa, and he did like he says, meaning that in order for him not to have returned the get back to the woman, there would have had to have been two factors. One, traffic. Two, is that there were two people in that town known by the same name. Now, the Gemara says now, which one of the factors were missing? So the Gemara says there we have two versions to the story. One version of the story is that it was in a place where flax was sold. So if it was a place where flax was sold, so you had a lot of traffic over there, but we did not have the factor of the there was somebody else shared the, in this town shared the same name. Now, another version, it was a place where the flax was soaked. So that's that was basically the factory. Not a lot of people over there. And despite the fact that there were two people in the town with the same name, but it was not a high traffic area, and therefore Rabbah returned the get back to the wife. Okay. Adkan. Where do we stand right now? We lost the get. Do we return to the wife? So Rabbah says, to put it succinctly, under most circumstances, yes, you do. Again, presuming that the husband admits that he wrote the get and he delivered the get. So then it will be returned to the wife. The only time that we're going to be concerned that maybe the names on the get are not the same as the principal, as the principals in the divorce, is only when, A, it was lost in a high traffic area. This is all according to Rabbah. A, was lost in a high traffic area, and B, we know that there were more than one person sharing that name in the town. Rabbi Zeira, Rami Masitsa, and Abraisa. Okay, and let's finish up today with the following. Rabbi Zeira also posed a difficulty between the Mishnah and the Braisa. But you see, unlike Rabbah, Rabbah posed a difficulty between the Mishnah and Bat Metzia and the Mishnah and Gittin. So Rabbah got to his conclusion by putting up a Mishnah and a Mishnah against one another. Rabbi Zeira is going to do the same thing, but a Mishnah against the Braisa. Umishani. And he's going to give an answer. So first, Rabbi Zeira starts with the Mishnah in Gittin. The Mishnah in Gittin, as we already went through, says that if I were on a caravan delivering a get, and I lost it, as long as I recover it immediately, so then I can deliver it. But if I don't recover it immediately, so then I cannot deliver it. Uriminu. And the Gemara says, and on that, we're now going to ask a stira based on a braisa. So if I recover a get in the market, if the husband says that he wrote it and he delivered it, so then we just simply return it to the wife. If the husband does not admit it, so then we return it to neither. Now here in the braisa, there is no time consideration. Even if it's recovered at a later point in time after it was lost, I'm still going to return it to the wife. So what do you see over here? Now the market is a high traffic area, and we are returning it to the wife. So where do we stand right now? A seer between the Mishnah and the Braisa. The Mishnah says, unless you recover it immediately, you don't return it to the wife. The Braisa says, even if I recover it at a later point in time, I'm going to return it to the wife. So Rabbi Zera's starting point is the steer between the Mishnah and the Braisa. And to which he says, it simply depends on whether or not it's a high traffic area or it's not a high traffic area. If it's a high traffic area, then we won't return it. If it's a high traffic area, sorry. If it's not a high traffic area, then we will return it. If it's a high traffic area, then we won't return it. Now, we certainly know how Rabbi Zeira dealt with the steer between the Mishnah and the Braisa. Does he also subscribe to Rabbah, which is that there has to be two factors in order to prevent me from returning it to the wife? Rabbah says it has to be a high traffic area, and we have to know that there were two people who shared the same name. Does Rabbi Zeira agree with that? Now, Ikadami v'ushuk zukdu dolo neder v'hainu d'rabba, and Ikadami alfa gav dolo huksuku lo neder u'pligi d'rabba. So the Gemara says on this point, we have two versions as to whether or not he agrees or disagrees with Rabbah. Okay, and we finish today with the following. Now, I understand why Rabbah decided that it was a better opportunity to ask a question from a Mishnah to a Mishnah. Because what is more authoritative than a Mishnah? Nothing. Meaning, a Braisa is secondary to a Mishnah. Rashi over here writes that Rabbi Chiya, when he writes his Braisas, where do you think he got them from? He got them from Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, the author of the Mishnayos. So, from Rabbah's standpoint, I'm going to ask questions from primary sources, Mishnah to Mishnah. But El Rebbe Zera, my time alo amakaraba. But why didn't Rebbe Zera use our Mishnah as a platform of asking this question? How come Rebbe Zera went from Mishnah to Braisa and not Mishnah to Mishnah? Amelcha mikatani ha amartenu nosim vafilus mamruba dilma ha amartenu nosim alolin kedekai milan laalter. So the Rebbe Zera says, because even though obviously it is better to ask a question from a Mishnah to a Mishnah, but the point from our Mishnah is not a compelling point. Our Mishnah does not say if you found a lost Mishnah, give it back under any circumstance. Our Mishnah doesn't say that. What you can simply say in our Mishnah is, no, you're only going to return it if the recovery of the get happened immediately. But if it didn't happen immediately, then I wouldn't return it. So our Mishnah is not compelling in terms of the Diuk and the Mishnah, so as opposed to the Braisa, where the Braisa seems to be much more expansive. And the Braisa says that we'll return the get to the woman under any circumstance. So that's why it's more compelling to ask the question from the Mishnah in Gittin to the Braisa. Okay, and let's just quickly recap. So since the Mishnah on Yuches and Alf, the question was, finding a lost get, do I return it? So the Mishnah says, I do not return it. But as the Gemara points out, that's only because the husband does not admit that he wrote up the get. Once the husband made an admission that he wrote up the get, so then we're going to return it. And to that, a steer between our Mishnah and the Mishnah in Gittin, because the Mishnah in Gittin says that once another caravan passes through, we will not return the get. So our Mishnah implies that you're always going to return the get. The Mishnah in Gittin says that you're not going to return the get. And so therefore, we have two basic approaches to how to respond to this. Really, it's one basic approach, but with one slight difference. According to Rabbah, the general position is that if you find a lost get and the husband says that he wrote it up and he delivered it to his wife, you're going to return it to the wife. And the only time that we're going to have a concern is when A, it was lost for some time in a high traffic area, and B, we know that we're from the place where the husband wrote it, there were two people who shared the same names on the get. And so therefore, under those circumstances, we'll concern ourselves with the possibility that this is a get written up by a different husband. Rebbe Zera makes the same basic point, but first of all, he opposes the Mishnah against the Braisa, not the Mishnah against the Mishnah. And the Gemara says, and we don't know if, according to Rebbe Zera, you need that second consideration. Meaning, from Rebbe Zera's standpoint, it could very well be that as long as I lost the get in a high traffic area, that by itself is enough to cause alarm that maybe this get was not written by the husband, but was written by somebody else.